This is a first for Wisconsin High. Wisconsin High doesn't usually bring birthday cupcakes to Wisconsin lawmakers, but in this occasion, when the longest serving Wisconsin legislator and the longest serving U.S. legislator, state legislator in the nation, has a birthday, Senator Fred Risser, happy birthday. There's your Wisconsin High
thank
cupcake.
You, Steve. Right. Hey,
thank you, sir.
It. Should I get a chance to blow it out?
Please do. Okay. Make a wish.
One, two, three. Thank you.
Well done.
Very good.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank
you. I think
you.
If the Blue Book's right, you're 90 today.
That's right, today, May 5th.
And is 90 the new 70? How do you feel?
I feel great. Beautiful day out, wonderful day to be alive.
Well, you have some traditions. You remember when you talked to first-term legislators, you said, tell them, you give them some advice. I'll go first. Don't use the elevators. What else do you tell them?
Well, that's right. I haven't used the elevator in 50 years in this building. And it's good exercise, and it's faster than waiting for the elevator to come back and forth. So it's good. And it doesn't cost anything.
Right.
And so that's one thing. Actually, I've got a perfect attendance record, so far as I can tell, for all this time. And of course, I live right across the street, so yep. It helps.
Yeah. So, what other advice do you give brand new legislators? Do you tell them watch what they eat, socialize? Go ahead, go through your primer to first-termers.
I tell you, my advice is tell them that they should be active. They have to have a physical being as well as a mental being. You can be a legislator who's smart, but if you don't take care of your body, you're not going to be able to do your job. And also, take care to remember your family. Don't do what some legislators do. Spend so much time legislating that they forget the important things of life, their family, their spouses, their children. These things become more important. And as you get older, you realize that that's significant. When I was young, I spent all my spare time campaigning because I thought that was the thing to do. Now as I get older, I realize, you know, there's other things important in life too. And
you have seen some service in the legislature do some pretty big harm to marriages and families and people, haven't you?
Absolutely.
But that's not the rule, is it? Most people have their heads on straight when they serve here?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think we have a better legislature than many if you take away the politics. I mean, individually, on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah.
Find people they want to serve. Politically, sometimes they get in the caucuses and they screw things up, but other than that, it's an enjoyable activity.
Did you think you'd still be a state senator at the wonderful age of 90, Fred?
No, I never had that in my mind. Nope. Of course, I don't know what the word retirement means. I'm honored that my constituency keeps reelecting me. I appreciate it, and I really enjoy this activity. You learn something new every day. I get a chance to meet with people. People get a chance to meet with me. And I think I'm as accessible as any legislator.
Well, another thing that struck me is you entered the legislature 60 years ago in 1957, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you represent the 26th district. It's a Madison district. I'm going to ask you how the legislature changed. But before I do, how has your 26th district changed in the 60 years that you've been serving it?
Well, it's getting bigger. You know, the city of Madison only had about 50,000 people then when I was born. Now it's got 250,000 people. And every reapportionment, the district becomes bigger and bigger. At one time, I represented the entire city. But now the city has grown to such an extent that the city has several representatives. And I don't represent the whole city. But how has it changed? I think it's become more dynamic. I think this community has become as active economically and active socially and in any community in the state. It's a wonderful community to represent because of the fact that the people are intelligent. They keep electing me, so they must be. No, I shouldn't say that, but I'm honored to be their representative, and I make that my principal activity. That's my main goal of life, is to be as good a representative as possible.
Paraphrasing former Governor Dreyfus, 18 square miles surrounded by reality. And you know, conservative commentators call it the People's Republic of Madison. It's different Madison is different than other parts of the state, and you hear legislators from outstate criticize Madison. How do you feel when just yesterday at the press conference, Assembly Republicans said Madison, I'm paraphrasing, it's not the rest of Wisconsin?
Well, I think Madison happens to be the leader, and the rest of the state better catch up. Frankly, we're ahead of the game on many activities, whether they're social or economic or political activities, and I think we're ahead of the game, so the rest of the state should catch up.
Okay. And you were just elected last November. You were unopposed. You were going to run again in 2020?
Who knows? That's a long ways away.
Okay. You've always been an avid bicyclist. Are you still an avid bicyclist?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to my 90-mile bike ride. And I know where I'm going to go. I have my bike pack. It's a Trek bike here. It's on the Capitol Square. And I go around Lake Monona, down Capitol Trail. People know that. And out to Military Ridge. And I go out to Barneville and back. And I got an odometer in there. And I'm looking forward to the trip. But I need good weather. We got good weather. But I need a full day. A full day.
For 90.
And I'm looking forward to, yeah, for my 90.
So you still go on 90-mile one-day trips?
Yeah. Well, not very often, just once a year.
I understand. I asked you how your 26th district has changed. Mm-hmm. How has this legislature, an institution that you care about deeply, how has it changed since 1957?
It's not the same. It's entirely different. By the way, when I started out, it was a white man's club. When I came into the Senate, it had never had a woman senator, never had a minority senator. They were all white men for the 100 and some years we've been a state. It's become much more diversified. The legislature has become sort of full-time for many of us. When I started out, it was a part-time job, and it was supposed to be a part-time job. Now we have made it so that every legislator has a room, they have staff, they have all the tools. The legislators in Wisconsin have all the tools they need to be good legislators. They've got good support staff, and they're treated well in that respect. And we've taken over the Capitol. We got rooms for all the legislators
yes.
here. When I started out, the desk was your office.
Yes.
And you had no secretaries. You had a secretarial pool.
And the museum was up on fourth floor.
And yeah. if you were a freshman, you didn't get use of the pool very often because they didn't have any. Of course, we didn't have any telephones, or we used the sergeant's telephone, and it's an entirely different thing. And of course, in addition to the diversification, and in addition to the professionalization, the activities have changed. It's become much more partisan.
Yeah.
And if we want to get into the political situation,
is that a bad trend, Fred?
Pardon?
Is that a bad trend?
I think it's a terrible trend. I think what's happened is the extreme partisanship on the national level trickled down to the state level, because I think it started on the national level and came down to the state. And what's happened is that we have more straight party line votes on bills than ever before. And the debates are not debates. What happens are the debates are handled in closed door caucuses, and people go in with various ideas and they come out of the caucus like sheep to follow their leaders. And what's happened is there's now real debate on the Senate floor very often. The majority party, they have the votes, so why should they spend their time talking? And they just sit down and let us talk, and then they vote their party line vote. That is a bad way of handling, because they're in effect debating in their closed caucuses as to what to do, and then a majority gets the sort of requires the minority to follow along, and it's just not a debate society like I like to.
How does it differ from 30, 35 years ago when you were part of leadership, you were president of the Senate? Was there more bipartisanship there? were there more R&D resolutions and compromises on some of these major issues?
You know, is there more bipartisanship when there's one party when one party isn't in full control? In other words, when one party controls both houses of the legislature, the executive, and even the courts, you don't have bipartisanship because they don't need it. They have all the votes all the way up and down, and they don't need. But when you have one party controlling one house and the other party the other house, I think some of the best legislation comes through, because each party, each house wants to prove that they're the best, and so and you have to compromise to get the bill through. And I think some of the best legislation has happened when we've had split government, both Democratic and Republican governors. Now, I have served with 12 different governors.
Yes, six, I have. I wrote
six,
that down.
Six Democrats and six Republicans.
And I'm going to ask you, who was the least effective and the most effective governor? Because someone with your tenure can answer that question. Let's start with the positive. Most effective governor.
Well, I tell you, I liked all the governors in a way. I got along with all of them, and I thought that Lucy was the first four-year term governor.
Yes.
And so that was a factor. And so he had a four-year term. So he was obviously the most effective governor up to that time because he had the four-year term. Before that, the governor had to start running for re-election as soon as he was elected. And the two-year term governors did their best. I thought Gaylord Nelson was a very effective governor under the circumstances. And in fact, I thought all the governors had their effectiveness. The least effective, in my opinion, it depends on how you define the word effective.
Use your definition, sir.
If the word effective means you're getting through your program, it means one thing. If the word effective means you're doing the best thing for the state, something else involves. And I think if I were to grade the governors, I have to grade our current governor really very low, because I think he came in with the idea of running for president, and he introduced a budget which he thought would play well nationally. And it did not have the Wisconsin values. It did not include the environmental concerns. You know, we had Gaylord Nelson and we had Warren Knowles, Democrat and Republican. And they both were very environmentalist. That's why we had the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund. The Republicans used to be very environmentally concerned. But now, for some reason, they have lost tack of the environment. You know, without environmental concern, you don't have anything. You know, people come and go, roads come and go, buildings come and go. But if you don't pay attention to the environment, you're dead. Look what happens in South Sudan, what happens in Haiti, what happens in Brazil. You start deforestation, you start cutting up all the natural resources, you can lose life altogether. And so in the long term, we ought to pay some attention to the environment. Our current governor has paid, in my opinion, no attention to the government. Now, past governors have. Past Republicans and Democratic governors have been environmentally concerned. Let me make an example. The last State of the State talk by Governor Walker, he didn't mention the environment, didn't mention our great park system, didn't mention our environmental activities. Instead, he's been promoting privatization of our water, which I think is tragic. Water belongs to everybody, but we have passed a bill. Now, if you want to say effective means the governor's program is going through. He was effective on that.
Yes.
But I think that's a terrible thing. And to privatize the water is something that is against our tradition and against the constitution of our, really. He has tried to privatize education. Now, education is the state's most important activity. And the privatization of education through the voucher program, through trying to corporize the university and whatnot is terrible, in my opinion. And so if he can get this stuff through, Act 10, for instance, is an example, you can call him effective on his program. But I think it is against our traditions, against Wisconsin's way of life. And so I would say that it's not effective rationally, or not effective as far as the state of Wisconsin is concerned, because effectiveness to Wisconsin is to promoting our natural resources, to promoting our education. I could get into any topic you want to get into. But
well, here's my question. Since Republicans took over in the 2010 election, they've had 6 years. They've controlled the governorship and the legislature. They've enacted 50 major changes, most of whom you voted against. Well, my question is, why has the pendulum not swung back in favor of your party? Simply put, why can't your party beat Scott Walker?
Well, we can, and we're going to.
With who?
Well, we'll find someone.
Well, here's a list of 10 people who said no.
Well, they're scared of the money that involved in politics, and they're afraid. Some of them are, as did Senator Cullen say, he didn't want to spend all his time raising money. He wanted to promote him, the program. We'll find a good candidate, and we'll win.
What campaign themes has the governor been able to use to win election in 2010, survive a recall, re-election in 2014, and pretty much announce that he's going to seek re-election in 2018?
I have great faith in the public, and it's when they start voting and we get a larger vote. See, the Republicans have been pretty effective in cutting down on the vote, actually, and their ideas of making it more difficult to vote and cutting down on the pre-voting activities has helped them out. And their reapportionment, which they put through and they had total control, has hurt. There's no question, has hurt the process. But I know the pendulum swing. I've seen it swing back and forth. When I started out, there were more Republicans than there are now. When I started out, over two-thirds of the body was Republican, and all state offices were Republican. McCarthy was senator,
yes.
And we had Wiley as senator. So we had two Republican United States there. When I started out, this place was more Republican than it is now, believe it or not. And it's going to change. And when it's going to change, when the public realizes what's happening, they're going to get out and vote, because I have confidence in the public. This state has always gone ahead and knocked out the wrong people at the... Eventually, I mean, we had McCarthy, we knocked him out. We've had the barons that ran the railroads and ran the forests. The public gets stimulated, they'll vote and they'll change things. And I know absolutely that it's changed. And I'm here to help keep the light burning until we and keep this thing going. We'll get it. The public just has to know what's going on.
That sounds like a Fred Risser for governor speech.
No, not now.
Not now? but my question is, your long service in the Senate, you joined the Senate in 64?
1962. Yeah.
Your long service. Why did you never run for Congress, governor?
You know, I thought about that. And I thought I was an heir apparent, quite frankly, to run for Congress. But we had a great congressman, Kastenmeier, whom I respected tremendously, and I would never run against him. And he stayed on Congress for over 30 years.
Oh.
And at the time he left Congress, I had lost my appetite for Congress.
Okay.
At one time I thought about running for statewide office, and actually I did at one time. Consider running for lieutenant governor, but as it turned out, the lieutenant governor and the governor had to come from different parts of the state, and we had a governor candidate coming from this area, and so there is no real reason for a lieutenant governor to run from this area. So anyway, I've thought of different things in the past, but I can tell you at this stage of the game, I'm perfectly satisfied with where I am. I'm trying to do my best, and I learn something new every day. I enjoy it.
And here's what I'd like to learn from you. Who are the top three Democrats who should consider running against Scott Walker next year?
You know,
you're not endorsing them. You're throwing out names. Go ahead.
You've come to ask me a question that I can't answer.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not going to answer that.
Someone of your standing?
I'm not going to answer that question. No. I think, there's a number of people that you could run, and I could name a number of our state senators who are eligible for running, and some of them have thought about it. But I'm not going to use this program to advocate a specific person for governor.
Okay.
I think that whoever we have is going to win, and that we'll have a good candidate, and we'll pass the word to the people, and we're going to stimulate the people to vote. And if, you know, when only 25% of the people voted in April for the statewide Department of Public Instruction, that's an important job. For a Supreme Court, that's an important job. 25% of people. You're not going to have an effective government. When we have more people voting, we're going to have better government. And so our job is to get the people out and have them question their candidates for running for office, their candidates for governor, their candidates for legislature and whatnot.
You mentioned the Supreme Court. Do you consider it a partisan court dominated by conservative Republicans?
Yes.
Now, is it still nonpartisan?
I think the court has become partisan because through the elections of candidates who have taken the partisan route to get elected, I think the court's become partisan.
Now, is that a result? Is all this, the big money in politics and increasingly political races for the court, is this a result of the Citizens United decision, sir?
That certainly had an effect, yes, and that was a bad decision.
Should there be a constitutional amendment to repeal that?
It doesn't have to take a constitutional amendment. Congress could repeal it.
Okay.
And they should. And all they have to do is pass a law to change the court. Congress has the last word on this.
Let's talk national politics. Why did your party lose the presidential election?
Well, of course, our candidate has indicated that she lost because of what the FBI did at the last minute.
Do you believe
issuing
that?
I think it had an effect, yes. I do. And I think the
reason... also never visited Wisconsin after the April primary.
Well, you know what I think? I honestly think that the vote was not for Trump. Was against the establishment. People were upset with what was going on in Washington, D.C. And quite frankly, the Republicans are to blame because they decided they wanted to mess things up to avoid Obama having a fairly good legacy. So they took a negative view. And when he went around with some of their ideas, then they changed their ideas. So Congress became very ineffective, and I think the general public was fed up with what was going on in Washington. So how does the public vote? They could vote for Clinton, who tended to be part of the establishment, image-wise,
yeah.
Or they could vote for this guy, Trump. I don't think they voted for Trump. I think they voted against the establishment. People tend to vote against rather than for. And so I don't consider it a Republican victory. I think it's a defeat of the establishment. And people voted the only way they thought they could vote.
Nationally, why didn't your party appeal to the Trump voter? Wrong themes, wrong issues, what?
Why they did not appeal?
Yes.
As I said, in my opinion, the Democrats voted for their Democrats, Republicans voted for the Republicans, and there was a group of people there that were just fed up with what was going on. And so they voted against what they perceived the establishment to be, and they perceived Clinton is part of the Obama establishment, and I think they voted against rather than for.
Voted against, okay.
Yeah, they voted against the establishment, and so the Republicans happened to win. I think when Obama won the first time, they tended to vote against the establishment. They were upset with Bush. He threw us into a depression, and people were all fed up with him. They may not have liked Obama particularly, but they voted against Bush, and that's why he won,
in
my opinion.
In your 60 years as a legislator in this building, what one bill that you got passed are you most proud of?
Well, when I started out, I was working on women's issues, and I was able to pass the bill that took contraceptives off the indecent article list. We were one of the last states to do that. And I had very interested in Planned Parenthood, which at that time was supported by
Republicans. Your front door to your office says, yes. I stand with Planned Parenthood.
Yeah,
excuse me for
it.
Interrupting.
But more recently, I was successful in the Clean Indoor Air Act, the regulation of cigarettes. That was a real battle, and which I worked on for over 25 years, believe
yes.
it or not. I introduced a bill when I first started out to outlaw smoking for those under the age of 16. It only got one vote, mine, and it failed. And so there's been a gradually turnaround. And I think that this has been a really good bill. People like it. It's a healthy bill. But it was fighting the establishment all the way. That was tough.
That was one of your major causes,
yes. mm-hmm.
the indoor
bill
to ban.
Yes. And in fact, there were several bills. We had gradually to take restaurants of over 50 and under 50 and 25, and we had to...
You worked on the first collective bargaining bill that Act 10 repealed, didn't you?
Pardon?
You worked on the yeah. collective bargaining bill
that
Act 10 repealed.
Yes, I've worked on that. But I worked on the bill that established municipal municipal unionization initially. Yeah. That was back in 1959.
Okay.
And that was Gaylord Nelson was working on that. And then it was expanded under Knowles, a Republican, expanded to cover federal state workers. And it received bipartisan support at that
time. So you were championing the unions in 1959. What do you think of what has happened to unions now in 2017?
Well, the majority has done a pretty good job of reining them in.
Okay.
And it's unfortunate, but again, I think things will change. And I think that people will realize that the union movement has served to upgrade the middle class in this country and did a good job of helping health care of union workers, helping the wage situation. Unions served a very useful purpose.
So you expect that pendulum to swing back?
Oh, the pendulum.
You've seen it swing both ways?
I've seen it swing back and forth. You know, in the time I've been in the state senate, I've been president off and on five different times, which means that five different times the state senate during my tenure has switched from Democrat to Republican.
Right.
It's going to switch again.
Well, as a former leader, if you could solve the highway funding problem, how would you solve it? Wave a wand. How would you solve it?
It needs more funding. I would against more borrowing. Right now, 20 cents out of every dollar we bring in is used just for interest.
For debt service, yes.
So we're going to cut out.
Would you raise the gas tax?
Well, I don't know if that's going to solve things because that's not enough to do it. You know, the legislature cut the gas tax by one penny some years ago, and the legislature cut out indexing.
In 2006.
I voted against both those bills. We should have retained indexing. We should have retained the gas tax increase. But that's not enough. We've got to find additional sources. And furthermore, we're having energy-efficient cars. And so the gas tax isn't bringing in as much money as it did.
But I haven't heard any solutions to the $1 billion shortfall in highway funding from you.
Well, I think we should have a number of pilot programs. And Oregon has an interesting pilot program. They decided to, by voluntarily, put little boxes in cars that wanted to. And they're charging by the use. In other words, by the miles. And so they're sort of a tax by the number of miles you put on. Of course, rural people don't like that because they have to put on more miles than urban people.
Right.
And there are other things. During the war, World War II, we had a luxury tax. And we charged more on expensive vehicles than other vehicles. There's a lot of things that can be done. And some of the local units of government are charging on wheel taxes to help them out. There's innovations, but I think that we should try a variety of private projects, and we need more money, and we don't need to borrow it. We can find
two final questions. In your 60-year legislative career in this building, any regrets?
I can't think of any regrets. No, I've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed the opportunity that I have been given to be a representative. It's my life's work, and I'm trying to do the best I can.
Okay.
And I consider myself as accessible as anyone, and I want to do the best I can. You know my four-generation story, and I'm the fourth generation here, probably born with a political spoon in my mouth. And while we're at it, the four generations of four different political parties, and it's the political parties that have changed. Not my ancestors, who were all supportive of public education, supportive of progressive social justice. And you know, four different political parties. I'm the only Democrat. My father was the progressive, last progressive office holder in the state of Wisconsin. My mother's father was, Warner, was a Lafollette Republican, after whom Warner Park was named, mainly because of his work on Park and Pleasure Drive rather than the legislature. And my great-grandfather was Colonel Warner. He served with Grant, was with Grant when Lee surrendered at Appomattox, lost an arm at the Battle of Deep Bottom, served in both the Senate and the Assembly, and was originally elected as a Unionist, subsequently as a Republican. But so I have a tradition of public service, and I knew from the day I was born that I was going to go into some kind of public service.
And then my last question, besides eating your Wisconsinite cupcake, how are you going to spend your birthday?
Well, I'm spending it right now with you.
I understand. And then you've got another party coming, another one or two?
Later this afternoon, I'm beginning together with a number of people in the Capitol. And another thing I'm doing, I'm going to have a public celebration at the Garner Park on May 20th from 1 to 5 p.m. at 1 to 4 p.m. And you're welcome.
Well,
you're
thanks invited. For the invitation.
May 20th, it's Saturday, from 1 to 4 at Garner Park, and I'm having a public celebration, you're invited.
When you blew out the candle, Senator, what was your birthday wish? You can tell.
I'm really happy that I'm in good health and happiness, and I'll tell you, the reason I'm 90 and sitting here with you is because I've got good genes, I haven't had any serious illnesses, and I got a fantastic wife. My wife, Nancy, is what's keeping me going, and without her, I wouldn't be here.
Democratic Senator Fred Risser, 26th. Happy birthday, sir.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thanks. Thank you.